guys. Welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of your favorite Falcons fan site, The Falcoholic. I am DW, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the June, Petter of Dogs, person of her name, the Daenerys Targaryen, the Falcons Twitter, she who will not be bossed, Gina Madeline Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
David, I'm doing well, thank you, and I appreciate that you had to take such a deep breath before you launched in my nickname.
It's more about my lack of cardio than anything, which is shameful. But
you got to be in shape to rattle that one off.
Joining us for today's podcast is one of our favorites. He's been on the podcast a few times before. He is one of the writers at The Falcoholic, and that is Carter Brazelaw. Am I saying that right? Or am I massacring it, Carter?
God. Brazil, yeah. The country.
You went with the fake Facebook name, yeah.
Is it Carter Brazelaw?
That's the traditional Irish, David, the traditional Irish. So, yeah, we'll run with that.
Nailed it.
Okay with it. You can call me whatever the hell you want for the rest of the podcast.
That works.
How are you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Great. Just massacring names and running out of breath. Poor cardio. Let's get
off
this
to a great
thing going.
Start.
So we are into week three of the NFL preseason, and with that, the Falcons will be traveling, going on the road to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. And this is honestly, you know, the third preseason game is considered the dress rehearsal. I think that's sometimes overstated. I think some fans were hoping to see the Falcons' entire first-team offense take the field in light of the comments from Jalen Ramsey about Matt Ryan and him being overrated as the quarterback. But let's take all of that into account. I'll start with Gina. Gina, we know that quite a few players are actually going to end up missing this game. So what can you tell us about who will and who will not be playing in week three of the preseason for the Falcons?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we'll see some decent playing time from, you know, like Matt Ryan, Tevin Coleman, you know, the starting offensive line, the tight ends, you know, Austin Hooper will certainly get plenty of run. And beyond that, you know, you'll see Ridley quite a bit. I don't think Julio plays. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet, but I do not expect him to. I do not expect Devontae Freeman to play. And, you know, Sanu should be out there, so they'll have a decent little receiving core on hand to go up against that Jaguars defense. But I think that I know Deion Jones is out. Ricardo Allen's out, you know, so on defense, you're going to see kind of a skeleton crew too. You'll see some, you know, some backups getting some opportunities to show why they should land on the 53-man roster. So all in all, I would just encourage Falcons fans to remember something that they seem to have struggled with this preseason, and that is preseason games don't matter. They don't matter a bit. What matters is having all these guys healthy and ready to go week one. And I would like to harken back to, I believe it was Mike Smith last year in Atlanta, when he made Roddy White play in week four of the preseason, then he got like a high ankle sprain that derailed his entire year. Maybe that was his next to last year. But anyway, I would like to avoid any of those shenanigans for this team, because I feel like they've got a lot of talent. They have a very high ceiling going into the season, and they've got to be healthy to reach that potential. So let's just all take a deep breath and not freak out about week three of the preseason. Thank you in advance for your cooperation.
Carter, your thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the third preseason game is always, I mean, it's the dress rehearsal, but it's also not the time to settle any kind of, you know, media score. As Gina was saying, you know, the best we can hope for preseason games is to, you know, let guys just like knock the rust off. You know, obviously the starters will be getting, you know, a decent amount of run, probably three or four series. I don't expect them all to play the first half, but in terms of the Jalen Ramsey stuff, you know, I'll knock on wood here. We can hash that out in the Super Bowl. yeah, that's the time to deal with that. But, you know, going up against the Jaguars, really solid defense. It'll be a good time, you know, for Atlanta's, you know, second and third team to see what they can do, you know, against a really decent team. I'm looking at Calvin Ridley in terms of, you know, first team snaps to see what he can do against a guy like Jalen Ramsey.
Right.
So it'll be a solid test. And AJ Bouye. Yeah, it'll be a solid test, you know, for the first team, and then, you know, just letting the second and third team get their runs and, you know, position battles. So,
yeah. Excellent points. And Gina, I think you pointed this out in one of our chats online earlier today that, honestly, it's going to be a good chance for Ridley to continue to get a ton of the playing time that he needs, the timing that he needs with Matt Ryan. So, obviously, we're not seeing Devonta Freeman. We're probably not seeing Julio. So do you think this is actually working out pretty well as far as developing or giving Matt Ryan more time on the field with Calvin Ridley before the games start counting?
Yeah, I think that it is. And I mean, there, no matter what, obviously Ridley came out of, you know, arguably the best program in, not even arguably, I mean, Alabama is the best program in college sports right now, has been for years. And so obviously he played against top flight defenses, and he, you know, I think that Nick Saban instills a legitimate work ethic and that sort of thing into his players. So I think he's coming in ahead of the curve compared to some rookies that I've seen since I've been covering this team. That said, there's still always learning curve, even when you played at Bama. And so I think that having a chance to go out there and go up against two of the best corners in the league in Bouye and Ramsey, and plus, you know, just that defense as a whole is so good. I mean, they really are really impressive. And so I think it's a great opportunity for him to really cut his teeth and, you know, get a taste of what the real season is going to be like. So I think that this game is probably most important for the rookies because, you know, the opponent's going to play with a little bit more intensity than you see in weeks one and two. And so I think this is, you know, a particularly good learning experience and a chance for Ridley to get ready for week one and get a sense of what that's really going to be like.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I think people, you know, it's always snap judgments, but I think people were a little bit disappointed in the, you know, in Calvin Ridley's first game where he had, what, one reception for -2 yards?
Right.
And then he immediately comes out in the second game and, you know, for, what, you know, a quarter and a half sets the world on fire. So, up against that first team Jaguars defense is going to be a good test for who is essentially, you know, the future of the wide receiving core of the Atlanta Falcons, you know, for the next, you know, however many years. So, yeah, it'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually thinking about this the other day with Julio being 29. Arguably, he probably has four, you know, maybe 5 years at most, given how, you know, receivers are sort of retiring in their early or mid 30s now. And where Ridley's concerned, he's probably got 10 years. So as you know, that he is going to be the future of this franchise as a wide receiver in the next, 2-3 years. And that's not a small thing. So, and it's not critical that he is a big contributor this year, but I think the more that he can put defenses on their heels, force them to honor the other receiver on the other side of Julio, it's going to open up the game. It's going to open up the stuff underneath, especially for guys like Austin Hooper and even Sanu. Sanu could end up seeing some benefits from this in three wide receiver sets. So the more we can get Ridley ready for the regular season, I think the better. And as you noted, I think the fact that fans were sort of in freakout mode and in celebration mode after just two games.
Yeah, you just got to just calm it down. It's right. Preseason. We're letting them get their work in. But it's also not to discount. Calvin Ridley looked great last week. That little move he put on David Amerson, oh, it was so pretty.
It was pretty.
Yeah.
He just ran right by him. There was nothing he could do.
That was, and to see it live, The speed really jumped out, I think, on that play. And I think, you know, a lot of the people were wondering just how fast is this guy? And on the kickoff return, it stood out. And on that play, it stood out. I think he's got that top end speed that we were hoping we would see in the games. And it's certainly playing out that way. So excited to see him. As far as the injury notes, Gina, you did point out a few of the names. I just want to run down real quick the names that we know for a fact won't be playing. I do believe that Julio is expected to be out. We know that Devonta Freeman will not be out, will be out. Sorry about that. Deion Jones, Ricardo Allen have been ruled out. Marvin Hall has also been ruled out. So one of the young receivers that's actually looked pretty good in this preseason and actually was on the 53-man roster last year as well. Will not be playing in this game. And I think there is some question on whether or not Matt Bryant, our famed kicker, he of 43 years old, will kick in this game. I think at this point, you give that man all the rest he can get. 43 is a rough age for kicking a football every day. So those are the confirmed, at least as far as we know, injuries or suspected injuries going into Saturday's game against the Jaguars. So, Gina, we're going to shift some gears.
Shifting gears.
And I like this topic, and I hate this topic simultaneously, and it's the surprise cuts. As we get to week three of the preseason, we begin to know who is really fleshing out a role for themselves on the 53-man roster, who some of the backups will be. But there's always, it seems like with every NFL team, at least one surprise cut, someone that doesn't make the roster that you were positive was going to make it, that you knew with absolute certainty was a lock for the 53-man roster. And the Falcons are no exception. So, Carter, I'm actually going to go to you first with this one. Of the guys that we have seen the past few weeks and what we've heard from camp, who do you think could be a surprise cut for the Atlanta Falcons?
See, when I was going through like the pre-show notes, this is something that actually stumped me a little bit, because Atlanta has such a strong roster that it's hard to, you know, kind of pick out that one guy that you think could be the surprise cut. But if we're going there, I think Austin Pastore is probably going to be the one. That rookie offensive tackle, still can't pronounce his name. I don't know if it's Gano or Gano. either or.
Go no.
Go no.
We'll call him go no.
He's looked really solid in the first two preseason games. Yep. And Pastore, you know, Atlanta got him from Cleveland. Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year. Mm-hmm. Didn't get much run. He's been on the roster, but hasn't really established himself as that swing tackle that we need. So I think he could be a guy that, you know, by the end of the preseason, isn't on the roster anymore.
Yeah, really good pick. Wouldn't surprise it surprised me a little bit, but I think Gano has stood out in a good way.
Go now.
That's right. Gina, who do you think could be a surprise cut for the Falcons?
I was actually going to say Pastore, so now I'm going to get creative. so I think the Falcons probably keep Matt Ryan. Like, I think that they probably hold on to him.
Maybe.
But you know what they could do is try to shop and then go with Kurt Benkert. Wow. That was just a lot of alliteration in one sentence. And so they could try to not necessarily cut shop, but they could try to trade him and get something of value for him in return. And so all I'm saying is shop probably wouldn't be a surprise cut, but he might be a surprise goodbye before the season. Kind of like what they did when they moved things around to get Andy LaVitre in here, like one of those last minute kind of things. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know that Schaub has looked good. This is not a knock on Schaub at all. please don't act like I am somehow slandering that job. I'm not. Schaub actually looked really good last week. Somebody just got really sensitive about Schaub when we did Bingo a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, my guy is Bingo. Like, either he throws a pick six or he doesn't. If he doesn't, then you don't get the square. Like, it's not that serious. It's preseason week one Bingo. Let's all take it down a notch. But so I'm not slandering Matt Schaub.
I remember seeing that. You guys are always talking down on Matt Schaub.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, buddy, this is just supposed to be a fun thing to do during week one of the preseason. Let's all get our lives together and put things in perspective. So, yeah, it's not a knock on Schaub. I thought Schaub played extremely well last week in particular. I just think that he costs a lot of money. They could go younger and cheaper the position. I think that Benkert shows promise. So, hey, why not? Like, these are supposed to be surprise cuts or surprise moves. In this case, not necessarily cut. I'm going with it. You heard it here first.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, yours is a sexier surprise cut than mine.
Yeah, you know, what can I say?
I'm also going to go out of left field, and I don't necessarily expect this one to happen, but it wouldn't entirely shock me if it did. So I'm going to actually go with Justin Hardy as a potential surprise cut.
I actually thought about that.
Yeah, and here's my reasoning. You know, the Falcons in the past, despite some people saying they'll carry up to 7 or 8 wide receivers, the most that they ever carry at any given time, Gina knows what I'm talking about, the most that they ever carry has been 6. And there have often been times where they have decided to carry just 5 wide receivers and carry an extra position elsewhere on the roster. And there are some other positions where there are some deep position battles, particularly at linebacker, where we've got some promising young guys that could demand that they add another spot for those linebackers. And if you look at the receiver position, you've got obviously Julio, Sanu, and Ridley. After that, Marvin Hall has looked really good. He looked good last year and good enough to make the roster. That's 4 wide receivers. I do believe Russell Gage, as a special teams guy, has been looking good on special teams at least. He does offer some potential as a returner. So there's your a potential 5th wide receiver. And this is also the last year under contract for Justin Hardy. And he just – I love his hands. I love what he's able to show occasionally as a receiver. But I feel like he is a draft pick from the previous regime. And I'm not sure that his position on the roster is 100% solid. So to me, it would be a surprise. But not entirely shocking. So that's why I'm going to say Justin Hardy could be that big surprise cut for the Falcons.
Yeah, like when I think about it, you know, considering Marvin Hall's value in terms of the kick returner battle, I know they've been giving Hardy some run there, but if I'm Justin Hardy, I'm begging for reps at any kind of punt returner or kick returner role. Because the way Hall has looked in any kind of returner role, I feel like at least gives him a place on the roster. You know, Atlanta traded up for Russell Gage. He's going to be a special teamer primarily, but I mean, he made that leap and grab last week, which was beautiful. Yep. I think that's actually a decent like shock cut. I could see that happening.
Yeah, I could too. I think that, you know, it is a crowded position group. They've got a lot of talent there, and I think that those decisions farther down the depth chart may come based on special teams value. And I think that Marvin Hall does have more special teams value than Justin Hardy does.
Yeah, and I think in Dan Quinn's world, he loves that athleticism. And I think, you know, that you look at some of those other guys like Russell Gage, Marvin Hall, and just purely from a speed standpoint, these are much speedier receivers than what Justin Hardy is typically known for. Hardy's hands are freaking fantastic, so I don't want to undersell him as a receiver. But I do think from just a pure athleticism standpoint, some of those other guys do stand out a little bit above him as well.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You're spot on.
So there's some surprise cuts for our listeners to take home and digest a little bit as we get closer and closer. Because I believe we start to see the cuts after the fourth preseason game, which is a bit of, I think they instituted that last year, but it used to be you would see some cuts after the third, and I think the NFL has changed that rule, that they give them the full 90 until after the fourth preseason game. So we'll know more in a couple weeks. It's going to be really interesting to see. On to our next topic. Before we close out with some of our questions from our readers on Twitter, and that is some season predictions. And this is, we've seen some very, very interesting ones, including one that I wrote about today that came from Sports Illustrated from Andy Benoit, of all people, predicting that the Falcons would win the Super Bowl. Of course, that would be playing at Mercedes-Benz, which if you're talking about pipe dreams, that would be friggin' amazing. But there's, let's be honest, there are predictions all over the place. It's hard to say with certainty, but I think Gina, Carter, most people agree that the Falcons have an incredibly talented roster, arguably one of the most talented in the entire NFL. So let's start with some of these predictions. I want to start with just the general prediction for the regular season record for the Atlanta Falcons this year. So Gina, I'll go to you first. What do you think the Falcons are looking at wins and losses in 2018?
Well, David, I have a proud history of underselling what I think the Falcons can possibly do. And so I'm not going to divert from that. I think that they're going to go 10-6. I think that the NFC is extremely competitive. I think that the NFC South is extremely competitive this year. And so I don't even know if that's going to be enough to get a playoff spot. So I hope that I'm wrong, but that's where I have them penciled in.
All right. Excellent. Carter, regular season, what do you see, wins and losses?
I'll hit you with a dose of optimism here. I honestly, this is the most, in recent memory, this is the most well-balanced Falcons team that I've seen on both sides of the ball. There's playmakers all over the place, and that's always been, you know, when they do make the playoffs, that's been the Achilles heel. You know, it's either the defense or the offense. You know, one side doesn't click. I've got their floor at 11-5. I think I'm optimistic 13-3.
Wow. That is very optimistic.
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
I hope that you're right and I'm wrong.
No offense, Gina, but I agree with that statement.
Yeah. None taken.
It's good. It's preseason. It's good to be optimistic.
Yes, absolutely. Even though I published an article that said, shut up and stop it.
I saw it. I downloaded it too.
There you go. Download it right into your brain.
Download.
Oh, yeah. I shouldn't have started drinking at 4 p.m. today. Anyhow, I'm massacring.
Agree to disagree. I at least am almost to Chris's house, so I can finally have a drink because I've been driving this whole time. So I am extremely sober.
Oh, that is not how
everybody. Let's have a moment of silence for my sober state. It's a sad experience.
Indeed. As for me, I do think the talent's going to pay off. I think if you look at what they did last year with essentially a dysfunctional offense, I think that Sark will turn it around this year. I don't think we're going to see the 2016 offense again, but I do feel like this defense is going to be a top 10 unit, which had you paired a top 10 unit with that 2016 offense, they would have been unstoppable. I think we'll see a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. And I think that will be enough to get them to 11-5. There's always head scratcher games. People are going to feel like 16-0 every week, but I think 11-5 is reasonable. I think they get into the playoffs. I think they make their run there. So, second prediction how will we do within the division? So our record within the NFC South. Carter, I'll start with you.
Record within the NFC South. Well, I've always got to chalk up a loss to the Saints, which sucks. But going to the Superdome, it's never easy. So I'll throw one loss at New Orleans. I think we take Carolina both times. Their offensive line is in an absolute state of flux right now. So yep. I don't know how Cam Newton even has time to throw a football. And I think we split with Tampa. So what is that?
4-2.
4-2. There we are.
All right. Carter's saying 4-2, a loss to the Saints and a loss to the Bucks. Gina, what's your prediction?
Well, as you know, all of these teams in the NFC South are hot as garbage. That being said, I do think that we split with the Saints. I think that we drop one in the Superdome.
There you go.
My bad. I misspoke. I did not misspeak. It is a Superdome. I think that the Bucks are actually just more hot-ass garbage than usual this year. And I was talking to a Bucks fan today because I'm doing some recruiting for a position they have open. So we were kind of going back and forth just about Mike Smith's tendency to do shit like drop Paul Foley in the coverage. And, you know, this guy was like, oh my God, I can't believe that how crazy that makes me. And I'm like, yeah, he was our coach for a long ass time. It's terrible. And so I think that, you know, Smitty is going to go full Smitty this year and do some crazy wild ass shit that doesn't make any sense on defense. And I think that the Falcons take both those games. And then I think that they drop one to Carolina. So I also say 4-2. But I think that those losses will come to the Saints on the road and to the Panthers on the road. The Panthers just seem to have the Falcons number at least once a season. And then the other time in the season, who knows, Matt Ryan might throw for 500 and Julio might go off for 300 and three touchdowns and, you know, expose them for what they really are. But, you know, they seem to be able to pull one off.
Yep. As for me, I do think they drop one to the Saints. It just seems like that's – and honestly, to be fair, that is one of the best rivalries in football. I don't think it's ever given the amount of respect it deserves. And it never matters what the record is of the two teams. They always play each other like it is a bloodbath. So
what week do we play them in New Orleans? I could look it up, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, I thought it was early on. So I'll have to look it up. I actually think
– oh, yeah, we do play them – no, it's right before Thanksgiving, 11-22.
There you go. I think the Saints will be the only NFC South team we drop a game to. I think the Panthers are going to be hurting badly with that offensive line. I think Cam is going to get beat up relentlessly this year. And their defense, honestly, they've got Mario Addison at pass rusher. And like the ghost of Charles Johnson.
I think the ghost of Charles Johnson retired today.
Yeah, he retired.
So yeah, so literally.
So they don't even have the ghost of Charles Johnson. Yeah, literally the ghost of him. Yeah. And actually Johnson was still playing at a high level, so that's a pretty significant loss.
Yeah. So I think there are a lot of question marks there, and I think the Falcons just match up. The Falcons have matched up really well with them since Quinn has come into town, and honestly, they should have gone 2-0 against them last year were it not for a pass dropped in the end zone. So, that said, I think
talk about that.
Yeah, we'll leave that one alone. Sorry about that. I'm going to say 5-1 in the NFC South for the Falcons, and they'll take their losses elsewhere this season. So, finally, let's close out real quick with the last two rankings. Carter, I'll start with you here. Where do you think the Falcons' defense will rank, and where do you think their offense will rank by the time the season is finished?
Well, defense. They finished last year ranked as a top five unit, right? Or the top 10 unit.
I think it was top 10, yeah. Not top,
top 10,
five.
Top 10, yeah.
They are going to be a top five unit this year. I think, I mean – the 2016 defense was so opportunistic, even though they gave up a shit ton of yards. Sorry. But they created turnovers, and that's where last year we didn't get the turnovers that we needed. Interceptions were, you know, pretty much bottom of the barrel. And I think, you know, the secondary improves. I think they create a lot more opportunities on turnovers. So, yeah, I'm going to pencil them in as a top five defense this year.
Wow.
Offensively, again, it's always going to be compared to Kyle Shanahan. We're going into, you know, second year of Steve Sarkisian, and I think all of us anticipate and fully hope that he gets a full working understanding of the offense. It seems like it. In the second preseason game, a couple of the things that he drew up, especially that, you know, that little wrinkle to Calvin Ridley for the touchdown, it was pretty. So I'm anticipating he improves. He's a lot more comfortable in Matt Ryan's, you know, well, in the offense with Matt Ryan as quarterback. So yeah, I'll say it's a top 10 offense in 2018. So top five defense, top 10 offense.
Awesome. Gina, how do you see it playing out?
Yeah, I would actually agree with all of that. I think that we will see a bounce back this year with, you know, after another off season for Sarkisian to adapt to the considerable talent he has on that side of the ball. And the defense, I think that they're only going to get better. You know, you have another full off season of experience for guys like Deion Jones and Keanu Neal, who were already playing at such a high level. You know, Vic Beasley and Pat McKinley both should be taking a step forward this year. So I think they could both be top five units on both sides of the ball.
Awesome. I think top seven for the defense. I'm a slightly hesitant because I want to see Vic Beasley actually deliver on the potential he showed a couple years ago. And year two for a pass rusher should be a big leap, hopefully, for Tack. We will see. If they get it together, I do think they can go from, you know, top 10 to top five just by having that, you know, stout pass rush. As for the offense, I think it'll be a top seven unit. I think there's just too many weapons. As Carter mentioned, I think we've already seen some signs that they look a little bit more confident than they did last year. And we're hearing a lot of the same things that we heard before 2016 as far as some of the key guys saying that they really feel like they're clicking now with Sarkisian. And that's a big deal. We heard that. You know, going into 2016, we sort of dismissed it at the time as, hey, this is just how they talk. But it did sort of bear fruit. So I'm hoping that's that lightning is going to strike twice and we're going to see a top seven offense this year. So, all right, let's close out by taking some of the questions that our listeners, readers have posted to us on the Twitters. So I'll start with the first one from Andrew. And he asks the group, in your opinion, how many points should this offense average this year? So right in line with the predictions we just made. Gina, I'll start with you. What do you think is a points per game target for this offense?
Look, anything less than 40 points per game is a failure, in my opinion. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to say 27.
Okay. Carter?
Yeah, 27, 28 points per game.
Yeah, I can't stray away from that. I don't think it'll be the 30. That's a high mark, and I think it'll be better than, like, 25. So that's literally split in the middle. So 27.5. There you go.
There we go.
I was going to say 28, but I still have so much post-traumatic stress associated with that number. So I went with 27.5 is a good number.
Oh God, I'm hurting inside. All right, from Jeff, he asks, if Duke Riley continues to struggle, which linebacker do you see taking over the majority of snaps from him? Carter, I'll start with you.
It's going to be Foye Oluokun. Like for a sixth rounder, he's really, really impressed. And his first two games, I mean, the first game much more than the second, But you know, that's what Saturday's for. And Deion Jones is out, so we'll see what he can do. But I mean, he's continuing to struggle. He looked better in game two, but he seems like he's thinking too much, and I don't think it's out of the realm of the possibility for a sixth rounder like Aluakin to, I don't want to say supplant him, but start taking his snaps on defense. So that would be my pick if Duke continues to look a little bit like he's lost out there.
There you go. Gina, your thoughts?
Yeah, I can't pronounce his name, but basically the same guy that Carter said. I spent that whole time trying to figure out exactly how Carter pronounced it, and then I just gave up and decided I was just going to say, yeah, same. When my kids were little, every time somebody would take their order at a restaurant, like Chelsea, my youngest, would order, and then Ashley would say, I'll have the exact same thing that she's having, because Ashley didn't like ordering at restaurants, and so I'm pulling Ashley now. I'm just the exact same thing that Carter said. That's who I think it will be.
Yep, I agree, but I will add this. I think that that position is a little bit overstated anyways. The Falcons play a ton of their snaps, at least 60% plus. In sub packages, which usually means a linebacker comes off the field. So Duke Riley, even if he was the starter, is not going to play a significant number of snaps. It's going to be less than 50%. It's going to be probably more around 35 to 40% of snaps. So whoever does replace him, I think we're looking at another corner or another safety, maybe DeMonte Kazee coming in and taking some of those snaps in those sub packages. So from a linebacker standpoint, Foyer, from an overall standpoint, I think it's going to be spread around because of the sub packages. This is a good question. And I think sort of self-admitted from Nick, he asks, what's the backup plan if Sark doesn't exceed our expectations in the first 6 weeks? Guy has incredible talent and an easy schedule to play with. Is there a shot at a midseason change? And he signs it spoiled fan. Gina, I'll hand that one off to you first. Do you think that we'll see a change midseason if the first six games don't go well?
No, and I'm going to – let me put some thought behind this. One, if you'll remember, I know nobody likes to remember, but the Bobby Petrino saga – that was so disruptive to the entire franchise. It was a very difficult situation. Arthur Blank does not like to part ways with people mid-season. And I think that, again, this is me talking about fans' expectations again, but I would implore fans to remember that your expectations are not necessarily the team's expectations.
Right.
And so, the team probably has a more comprehensive idea of what to expect from Sark, because they've seen, every bit of practice, every bit of everything, the meeting rooms, all of that kind of stuff. And what we see is, game day and reports out of practice, and that's pretty much it. And so, the team's expectations aren't necessarily the same as ours. And I do not see Arthur Blank being willing to part ways with any coach in the middle of the season.
Yep. Carter, your thoughts?
Gina gave a very well thought out answer, and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm going to go the irrational route and say that if by week six we're 2-4, burn the whole thing down.
That's burn also it, fair. Yeah.
Burn it to the ground.
That's fair.
There is absolutely no reason with the weapons at Steve Sarkisian's disposal, there is no reason why this team should not absolutely excel on offense. Yeah. It's been a good sign in the preseason and, through, off-season camp that they're making a concerted effort to get Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman both actively involved in the passing game again, which is what worked so well when Kyle Shanahan was at the helm. So if you have all of these playmakers on the field, and by week six, you're looking kind of rough, burn it down, David. Burn it all down.
Oh, I, My only thought here is I think the move that they would have made or that they were going to make to try to shore up the offense, they already made, and that was bringing in Greg Knapp sort of as an assistant. They're not calling him that, but let's call him what he is. He's essentially an assistant offensive coordinator with experience in the NFL, for better or worse. Some Falcons fans have a sour taste.
He's Sarkisian's floaties.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they'll let Sarkisian play the season out. It's possible behind the scenes. We will never hear it as fans, but it's possible behind the scenes if things don't go well that they shift more duties over to Greg Knapp or potentially even let him inject himself more into the play calling. So I do think you'll – I don't think they'll just let things run off the tracks completely, but I don't think you'll see them get rid of a coach midseason. So, as Gina said. All right. We had a few other questions. I'm going to cut it off there in respect of time and in respect of Gina's need to get alcohol into her system. Amen to that. So, Carter, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and what you're up to?
I'm up to a whole bunch of nothing except providing you guys with great clickable content. You can find me on Twitter at Poyo Tropicarts with a Z at the end, Poyo two L's. It's really, I should probably change my Twitter handle, I think, but as of today, that's
that was it's very complicated to explain.
That's where you can find me.
All right. And that is Carter Brashishaw. So
yes. Bramajam. That's me.
Bramajama. Carter Bramajama on the Twitters with the Twitter handle of Platico Pichicamacasa. So Gina, tell the listeners where they can find you and what you've got going on.
You can find me on Twitter at Gina Thomas. That's J-E-A-N-N-A Thomas. I'm usually posting pictures of my dog or being mad about something on the internet. And so that's basically what I'm up to. I am no longer covering the NFL for SB Nation. I'm back to just writing about the Falcons when I do write. I've moved into a different role at SB Nation, which I really love. And that means that I'm doing things like helping recruit people to write about the Bucs. Bless their hearts. But I will be, once the team gets into their regular season schedule, I'll be out there a couple of days a week and bringing you that hot ping pong content directly from the locker room. So I'm excited about that.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. And as always, guys, you can find me on the Twitters at FalcoholicDW. And we're ramping up that content again as we get ready for the regular season. We are going to try to get the podcast back on track as a weekly podcast again as we get ready for the 2018 season. I think we all needed a break for the for the summer. So we're hoping to bring you guys back some weekly podcasts. Content as we get into the NFL regular season. Can't wait for it. So for Gina Madeline Thomas, Carter Brazil,
I got it right this time.
For Gina and Carter, this is David Walker, DW, thanking you for listening, and we will talk to you guys next time.
Talk to you soon.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation. And I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.